It's a pleasure to present some of our preliminary work on our Patient Navigator Research Program. We're actually one of 8 sites around the country funded by the Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities, which is within the National Cancer Institute. And there is an additional site that's funded by the American Cancer Society. Bless you. I have nothing to disclose, no financial relationships regarding this presentation. All right, now all 9 sites in the Patient Navigator Research Program, or PNRP as we so affectionately call it, shared the same 2 primary aims. The first is to look at the timeliness of care from the time of an abnormal screening test to the resolution of that test. And the resolution can be either a diagnosis of cancer or it could be a no diagnosis of cancer, but that they know for sure this is not cancer. The second major aim is timeliness of care from the point of diagnosis, a cancer diagnosis, to the initiation of that first treatment. In Denver, we enrolled individuals who had an abnormal screening test result or a cancer diagnosis for prostate, colorectal, or breast. In Denver, we also wanted to look at adherence to the recommendations for diagnostic follow-up as well as recommendations for cancer treatment, including patient-reported outcomes. And so all sites also looked at patient satisfaction with medical care and satisfaction of the patient navigator. We included a survey that listed barriers to care received. And we also included a name on cost analysis. But what I'll be reporting on in this presentation is looking at the reported barriers to care. So this diagram, it was developed by the Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities at NCI, and it shows all the possible roles that a patient navigator can fill. In our Denver site, however, we focused on these roles related to working on health system barriers and patient-related barriers. So it can range from, for example, coping with an abnormal screening test result or a diagnosis and adherence to treatment, all the way down to social support, housing, and communication with clinicians. So they really did not get involved in clinical trials and community outreach. We employed 2 full-time patient navigators and 2 part-time navigators. 3 out of our 4 navigators were bilingual with another language, primarily Spanish, but we did have a Russian-speaking navigator. And as I mentioned earlier, we attempted to enroll patients within the Denver Health System who had a recent abnormal test for one of those cancers. So for example, our breast patients were typically had an abnormal result for a mammogram or a clinical breast exam. For our colorectal patients, it was often a positive fecal occult blood test. And our prostate cancers, it might have been a high PSA test or an abnormal digital rectal exam. And when that result occurred, we were notified and we attempted to enroll the patients. We also found out whenever anyone was diagnosed with cancer for any of those 3 cancers, prostate, breast, and colorectal. We surveyed the patients upon enrollment, so as soon as they were enrolled, we conducted a baseline survey, and we also conducted a post-intervention survey. For the length of navigation provided for our screening patients, we followed them all the way until their test result or the abnormality was resolved, up to about a year. And for our cancer patients, we followed them until the end of active treatment. So they had completed surgery, radiation, chemo, and they were probably just at the point of surveillance. And that might be under a year, or it could even take longer than a year to get all the way through. So this gives a snapshot of our participants that we enrolled. We enrolled about 1,100 patients into our study. And most of our patients in our study were related to breast screening abnormalities. About 20% were cancer patients, and they were, of course, were overwhelmingly female in our participant pool. Our participants do mirror the Denver Health patient population in that about half were Latino and about 20% were Black or African American. A third are non-English speaking, and a third have only some level of high school or less. The vast majority of our participants were not working, and most had very small households of one or two people. Almost half were at or below $10,000 a year in terms of income. We had only 11% of our participants having private insurance, so the majority were uninsured and on a sliding fee scale program, or had Medicaid or Medicare. And as you can see, our patients have a high level of comorbidities, with half being diagnosed with hypertension anytime over the past 5 years, a third were depressed, and about a fifth had either diagnosis of diabetes, COPD, and arthritis. So now we're looking at the barriers that were identified with the patient by the patient navigator and addressed by the patient navigator. Our navigators documented any identified barrier whenever they talked to patients, so it could be over the phone or in person. Transportation was the main barrier identified and addressed by our navigators. If you look at all of the identified barriers, so about a fifth of the barriers identified were related to transportation, just under 20% were related to medical appointments, and other barriers that came up frequently were complications with other illnesses, so dealing with those comorbid conditions, financial concerns, and social and practical support. But when we look at the time spent on these barriers, you'll see that communication with medical personnel actually took more time in minutes than other dealing with other barriers. And that's probably because we allowed our navigators to attend medical appointments with their patients. And during those accompanying of the patient to the medical appointment, they were actually able to provide emotional and social support. They were helped to deal with issues around health literacy, so understanding of the information that was being provided to them or the information that was given to them. But they also spent considerable time on transportation, appointment scheduling, and dealing with all those other diseases that you saw our patients had. If you look at the overall time spent, though, by a navigator, we wanted to make sure we were capturing the activities of the navigator that wasn't just reacting to a barrier identified by a patient. So that would be when the navigator is working with the patient and it was obvious, or they stated they can't get appointments, they don't have a ride. That's reacting to those barriers. Navigators also try to prevent barriers from occurring in the first place. And that's what we call proactive navigation. So it's all the stuff, the activities that they do behind the scenes that may be completely invisible to a patient. That might be scheduling appointments before the patient says they need to, or they need help with that. It could be coordinating with other clinics and other providers. It could be collecting information that they know the patient will need eventually, because the patient navigators understand the healthcare system, and they also understand the trajectory of the care that will be provided. So they're actually able to try to prevent those barriers from occurring. Then you'll see that they spend a good proportion of their time dealing with transportation and medical appointments, comorbidities, and financial concerns. When we compared our baseline survey to the post-intervention survey between the navigated and the control group, We found that the navigated patients showed a greater decrease in barriers identified related to work issues, related to navigating within the system, so knowing where to go, who to call, and also understanding of the information being provided to them. They also showed a much greater difficulty, a much greater decrease in difficulty with language issues when they had a navigator. So we're still administering our post-intervention survey, so we hope to have a larger population for analysis. We're also starting to conduct our analysis on our main outcomes, which is timeliness of care. We would like to, even though we know that most people appreciate navigation, and we know this from anecdotal reports, patients send letters, write thank you cards to our navigators, as well as the satisfaction with navigation survey shows, you know, great appreciation from having a navigator. We would really like to hone in on which subgroups of our population benefit the most by having a navigator. In addition, we are administering a survey to those who did not complete their recommended screening test or follow-up test, or did not complete or adhere to treatment recommendations, to find out for them what barriers really did make it insurmountable to obtain the recommended medical care. So in conclusion, patient navigation is showing promise, and we're seeing that in our data in terms of reducing barriers to healthcare, both expressed barriers by the patient, but also behind the scenes coordination of the care that people need. We know that our patients face a whole myriad of barriers, and they range from fear of medical treatment or medical interventions to scheduling of medical appointments and anything and everything in between. But we also know, given the demographics of our patients, that they really deal with a multitude of health conditions. And so we really need to probably do a better job in making sure that our navigators are fully trained on how to not just focus in on that cancer screening, but also look at all these other issues that are going on, because they end up dealing with that in one way or another. Thank you.